Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Good afternoon. This is Donna Sebo. I'm broadcasting to you live from Fairbanks, Alaska. My distinguished guests are in New York City, and through the wonders of technology, we're able to share some wonderful information and some time with you today, and I'm so glad you're able to join us. My guests today are Byron Janis, who is a living legend of the classical musical world. And you've just heard a piece of music that he performed magnificently. And also we have with us as well his beautiful wife, Maria Cooper Janis, who is the daughter of actor Gary Cooper. She's a talented painter. She's worked on television specials. We have with us today two very special individuals. I want to welcome both of you to the show, Mr. Janis and Mrs. Janis. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
May I ask you a question? May I call you by your first names?
Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wonderful. Byron, I absolutely was mesmerized by your book. I did not know very much about your background, and when I went into the foreword, and Maria's words were right off the bat, for 43 years I've lived with, traveled with, laughed and cried with, and most of all loved, an amazing man. Those are such powerful words, such poignant words. And you have a love story to share, but you had a life, Byron, before you became involved with Maria. You were a child prodigy. Tell us about how this was discovered about you.
Well, I was given a Christmas present by one of my uncles. Of a xylophone. We were told to bring our favorite Christmas gifts to school with us, and I brought the xylophone, and the teacher would be playing the piano, and we were dancing around, and so forth. And I just began to pick out the melody that she was playing on my xylophone. I'd never done anything like that before. And she was, I guess, astonished, and she came over to me, and she said, "Can you do that on the piano?" I said, "I have no idea. I don't know." So she lifted me up on the piano bench and sat down, and of course I did the same thing by ear, you see. And that's really how I started.
It's an incredible story. When you think of people like Mozart, whose father was demanding things of him, and he was just a little shaver.
Yes,
it's amazing when someone so young is able to do something so easily and comfortably without even giving it a second thought. It's as if you were brought into this life to be able to demonstrate these talents that you have shared around the world with people. And I was just mesmerized also by how both of you are very much aware of what people often call the paranormal. And I had the opportunity to talk with your wife, Maria, for just a few minutes, and it's been such a significant part of my life for so much of my life that I thought, wow, these are two people. We probably would never end up not having something to talk about because you have had phenomenal experiences. I really like what Maria said about you, that music is part of your soul, and you did not set out with, as a musician, to become a great star, which you did, but you didn't do that. It was something that just was very much an essence of you. Why is it that Chopin, the title of your book is Chopin and Beyond, My Extraordinary Life in Mystic and Music and the Paranormal, why did Chopin have such a draw for you?
I honestly, I don't know. When I was very young, something about him as a man interested me. I can't tell you why. I felt some kind of kinship towards him. So I asked my mother to please get me all the books she could on Chopin. And so she did, and I read and read and cried about his illness. And I mean, I started to play his music when I was about five or six, actually. But this was more than that. You know, I really don't know what it was, but it kept up during a lot of my life. And I had a, what can I say, I had a tremendous love for this man. And as I went along, things started occurring to me with him that were extraordinary. And I really don't know what to attribute it to. I thought a lot about it, but you know, I do think love is one of the strongest powers in the world. The strongest power in the world, I should say. And I think that maybe that had something to do with it, with these extraordinary things that happened.
One of the extraordinary things, one of many extraordinary things that happened to you, is that you were visiting the home of a friend. You and Maria both were there. And she made the comment about Viscount Paul de La Panneuse. I may not be pronouncing his last name.
Panneuse, yes.
Panneuse, okay. And there's a picture of the two of you, and she had made the comment, my goodness, he just looks like you, Byron. He could be your younger brother. And I looked at the photo, and I thought, that's right. What was that extraordinary experience that you had at his chateau?
Well, he was a great lover of music, and I didn't know him. I think he loved Chopin more than anything. But we got an invitation to come to his chateau. It's Chateau de Trailly, just outside of Paris, about 30 miles. And of course, I didn't turn it down. So Marie and I went out there to lunch. Found him absolutely fascinating. And Marie did say, yes, he does look so much like you. And I looked at him, and I thought, you know, he really does somewhere. I felt very, I know they're very strong. I knew this fellow somehow. I knew him. Anyway, he said, would you like to see our archive room? It's still out of 15th century chateau. And his family is one of the oldest families in France. There are 1,000 families in France that date to 1100, 500 that date to 1000.
Mm-hmm.
Way back with titles, and his was the one that went that dated back to 1100. And interestingly enough, yeah, I didn't know this, but he said any titles after that are bought.
Mm-hmm.
They're not real. So that's kind of an interesting historical fact. Anyway, he showed us the archive room. It was a huge room. Everything, all these papers all over the floor, nothing had been cataloged. He was just starting to get to that point where they wanted to start cataloging anything. I mean, you picked up a letter on the floor. It was a letter from the Crusades, and it was a letter from one king to another, I do think. we should behave so-and-so, think of the consequences, and unbelievable things, really. And then there was a wonderful, it was a beautiful truck made out of, what was it, Maria, boar skin?
Covered in boar's skin.
When did you go on?
Well, it was with big metal, I guess, copper studs in it, and the trunk was sort of halfway open, and it was overflowing with some beautiful dresses and fabrics and clothes and all that. And we started, you know, Byron sort of said, "Oh, you know, look at this," and he was fingering some of the materials, and his hands grabbed something sort of hidden underneath, and he pulled out a folder. Byron, go.
No, I can't pull out something that looked like a manuscript. Slowly, I pulled it out very slowly, and there were two manuscripts tied together with a light blue ribbon. And I looked at these manuscripts, and I said to Paul, "Do you know?" Because he told us to call him Paul. He said, "Do you know?" I said, "You know what you have here, Paul?" He said, "Oh, yes, my grandmother, you know, she was always writing down music, and she loved music and was scribbling things down." I said, no, this is no scribbling of your grandmother. This is Chopin." And he was astounded. "Chopin?" I said, "Yes, these are two waltzes of Chopin. And his handwriting is pretty, I knew a lot about his handwriting. He did a bass clef bottom for the left hand, like sort of nobody else. It was a very strange sort of figuration of the bass clef. Nobody else did that. I assumed they were in his hand. And then as I looked at them, I said, "My goodness, there are fascinating differences between these waltzes and the published waltzes." So I ran quickly. We went to the piano there and started playing and started showing them the differences. And I was in seventh heaven.
I can imagine.
You can imagine. And then, so we went back to our hotel in Paris, and I had to leave next day for a concert in Berlin. And this is one of these strange stories.
Well, we were sitting in the living room of the hotel, just having some tea, and suddenly Byron's hand started moving, sort of stronger and stronger, making circles. And you know, sort of gesticulating quite wildly, and Byron said, "What is this? What's happening?" And as someone who has done some research in this field, I said, "Maybe you want to write something." You know, the area of automatic writing is something that's quite common in the field of parapsychology. And he really couldn't stop his hand; it was like it had a life of its own. So I grabbed some hotel paper and a pen and, you know, stuck it under his hands, and immediately his hand went down and started writing furiously. And what came out was, what was written, or what came through him, was, "Tell Paul to look further in the archive room. There will be something to explain the waltzes." There'll be something further to identify the waltzes further. And then his hand went absolutely still, just quiet, you know, dead, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So after we were quite stunned and looked at the writing and looked at that, and Byron said, "Well, I guess I better call Paul, but I'm certainly not going to tell him where I got this idea," because we didn't know him that well. We had just really met. So Byron telephoned Paul and suggested gently that if he had the time, he should go back, and that there might be some more information there that he could find.
I said to him, "I have a feeling, Paul, that you might, something might be there that will identify these waltzes further." And knowing what that room was like, knowing how many papers there, I thought, "My goodness, if he ever got back to me in 3 months, it would be a miracle." And he sort of said, "Well, okay, I will." And then, astonishingly, he called me back the very next day.
Amazing.
It really was. And he said, "Byron, I found something." He found a folder in his great grandmother's handwriting in French, written and given by Frédéric Chopin, 1833. was important because the waltzes were published in 1835. So this was written 2 years earlier, and so forth. So it was a major discovery, and I came back to New York and called a critic at the New York Times, Howard Sternberg, and he came over and he said, "Well, they're authenticated, and it's a great story." So I said, "Fine." So we had them authenticated, and no question that they were in Chopin's hand, and so forth and so on. And then Sternberg said, "This is a front page story." So he put it on the front page of the New York Times. And it was a big story, whatever. And then it was all over the place, Cronkite headed on the news. And I'm telling you this for a reason. It was lots of written things about it, and some television. Well, that was that. And then we go to fast forward here to 6 years later. I'm at Yale University giving a master class, and they said, "Would you like to see some of our old music?" I said, "Of course." They have a great collection. And I, just before leaving, for whatever reason, those are the things that we don't understand, but they just happen, I pointed to a shelf on the top row where there were stacks of music and things, and stacks of whatever, I don't know. And so I pointed to someone, and I said, "What's that?" And then there were about four or five professors in the room with me, and they said, "Oh, we'll get up, we'll take the ladder and see." One of them went up, brought it down. He said, "This is Mark Chopin." I said, "Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Can I see it?" Of course. I sat down, I opened the folder, and, I practically fell off the chair, because what was in that folder were exactly the same two waltzes, together again for a reason we know not. And I looked at the date, 1832, a year earlier.
Well, what's even more amazing is that in your book you say Chopin demanded that upon his death all of his music be destroyed. And so
all of his unpublished music.
Unpublished music to be destroyed.
One of those waltzes was unpublished. He didn't. One of them was unpublished, yes. And however, his great friends said, "No, this waltz is too lovely. I'm not going to throw this out." So he made some arrangements. So, because there was no known manuscript of that waltz ever. So, I happened to have found it twice, you know. And the differences there were quite strong. So you see the development of a composer and how he, like an interpreter, changes his mind. Changes and writes things differently, you know.
In your book, there is also a wonderful love story, and that is about you and Maria. Now, you were married previously and to a lady for 11 years. Right. Maria, you must tell the story about how the magic occurred between the two of you.
Well, there's a little... The backstory is interesting, too, because prior to meeting Byron, about a year before... our family were very close friends with a great photographer, David Douglas Duncan, and he had given me two wonderful classical music records. One of them was Byron Janis, this young American pianist, playing Prokofiev's Third Piano Concerto. And P.S., classical music was the one area that I had no exposure to whatsoever. It was the only thing that wasn't in my family's wonderful bag of art and science and creativity and everything, but I didn't know anything. So I fell in love with the Prokofiev Third, but I didn't know enough to know how good it was. I mean, I just loved it. And I was doing some painting, some etching kind of things at the time, and I was working very, very intensely. Repetitive motion, I guess, and I frayed the tendon on my right wrist. Had to have major hand surgery. Then, fast forward, my mother remarries a wonderful doctor. they went to the south of France for a honeymoon, which was really a house party with friends. And my mother said, "If you're not doing anything, come over." So I jumped at the invitation to spend a few weeks on Cap Ferrat in the south of France. And the night I arrived was a party given for my mother and her new husband, and one of the first guests that arrived was this young, virtuosic American pianist, Byron Janis. And when he walked in, and I recognized him, of course, from the cover of the LP, I nearly fell over, because there was the person that I had been drawing to for the last 4 or 5 months, and wrecked my hand and had surgery, and in fact my arm was still in a cast. So I was quite embarrassed. And but what was magical was when we were introduced, it truly was, as it wasn't love at first sight, it really was like we recognized each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out later in talking about it that Byron had the same feeling. And my knowledge at the time was that he was very married, and I was very upset at that. And under my breath, I said, oh, damn, because, mm-hmm. you know, I was not a homewrecker type. I just thought, well, this is an impossibility, but there was this incredible moment between us. And then, you know, life seemed to weave an incredible pattern of events for us.
And eventually you were married, and you've been together ever since.
Yes,
Byron, yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I would just say we just celebrated our 46th year together.
Amazing. Byron, you were so gifted. You were so talented. You were training with some of the finest people in the world. You absolutely were loving your music, and as a teenager, you end up having an accident that could have ruined your career. What happened?
Yes. Well, when I was 11, I put my hand through a glass, one of those glass French doors with panes of glass. I was chasing my sister in some kind of a fight we had, and she closed the door on my hand. I put my hand out, and it was severely, my little finger was like, it was severely cut, and it was, you know, awful. I could see them fall. It was just a horrible thing, bleeding profusely. I was rushed to the hospital. They operated on it. They cut the tendon. They cut the nerve. I lost the use of one joint, and the most serious thing was it was left numb, and mm-hmm. it is numb until today, and nobody knew about this until about 1990-something or other. I've been well into my career for many, many years. And that was, the doctors all said, well, you won't be able to play the piano anymore, but you're going to find something to do. Don't worry, or whatever. And I listened, I heard that, and I said, I'm not listening to that. I am going to play the piano. And my passion, it was my life, you know? You're born with mm-hmm. a gift. What you do with it is up to you, but you're born with it. And I wanted to do something with that gift. And so I learned all kinds of ways to handle it. It took me time, but I did. And I was playing on the radio about 3 months after the accident. I mean, it was, I couldn't believe it. And I didn't think about it somehow. I was sort of natural to me to actually not accept this thing, you know? And I realized at that age, mind over matter, the importance of that those wonderful three words, and that stayed with me all my life in many situations, because as you know, I got arthritis later in 1973. All my fingers mm-hmm. were affected, my wrists were affected. Again, you'll never play again. Again, mind over matter, and I did play, and I managed to keep going and keep my standards, because, of course, just to keep going isn't the answer. But I had very high standards, having studied with Horowitz and, you know, being around Heifetz and Toscanini all the time, and I had, so I kept them. There were occasional concerts that I didn't like, and if I kept that up, I would have stopped. But I didn't keep it up. And in some ways, I was playing even even better in some ways than before in the lyrical things. Technically, not, but lyrically, yes. So that is the story of fighting adversity.
And you did it in more than one event. That was the beginning of many different experiences that you went through. And your training, I loved what Vladimir Horowitz said to you. You don't want to be a second Horowitz. You want to be a first Janus. And
right.
I think that is so important. You bring out so much information regarding the musical world that you were involved with. And you mentioned your arthritis. And it was at a very special gathering where you played and went public with the fact that you had arthritis, because nobody, Maria used to massage your hands and try to relieve the pain, and you suffered with this tremendously. But what was that event that Nancy Reagan was involved with where you suddenly made that announcement to the world that this
happened? Yes, well, the Arthritis Foundation asked me, would I become a spokesman for them? And that was, to admit that I had it was extremely difficult, but I finally, after 6 months, I decided, okay, I will. So they wanted to have, so they had it at the White House. There was a luncheon for all the governors' wives, and Nancy Reagan announced, after I played about 45 minutes, she announced that I had arthritis.
A very virtuosic program, I might add. I think everybody was bowled over. I mean, it was a lot of fire and the lyricism, but I think it was really quite spectacular.
Well,
you've got so many wonder. Yeah, there's so many wonderful stories in this book, and I know we're coming close to running out of time, but I want my listeners to know that you and Marie both met Uri Geller. There's a wonderful story in your book, and this is about your ring, Maria, that you were wearing. Can you talk about what happened at that event? Because you have a photo of the ring, and it's not a little tiny ring. It's a big ring.
No, it's not a tiny ring. It's a very substantial. Well, the interesting part is that the band is the gold band was like three twisted ropes together, so it was very, very solid and very thick, and it was at a state dinner at the White House. It was honoring Byron's 40th anniversary of his debut and honoring the first woman astronaut, Sally Ride, and the Emir of Bahrain. It was sort of a very big deal. And anyway, I was sitting in the room waiting for Byron to come on, thinking in awe of the power that's represented in that room, because everybody was there, and the man with the red phone and all of that. And I'm thinking to myself very strongly, the power, my goodness, the power that's here. But I'm then thinking, they don't know what power is, because the things Byron and I have experienced in this other area, the psychokinetic events, where with objects, you know, heavy, large objects moving and being transported around, it's another whole realm. So as I was thinking that and Byron was playing, my finger began to hurt, and I looked down eventually, because I tried to ignore it, I looked down and I saw that the entire gold band had cracked, was broken, it was split and broken, and it was bending, and what was hurting was it was cutting into my finger. So Byron, he just finished in time, I would say, and we got up to leave, and I barely got the ring off my finger. Then we stood in a corner and watched it as it continued bending into the position that it was photographed in. And there was a very unique coinciding of my thought about power, the power that exists that none of us are really aware of. It was an incredible moment, and a very sobering moment, too. And, you know, what that was all about, you know, we still ponder it.
Well, I'll tell you, this book, and I know you've got a gathering that you are going to be leaving to attend shortly. I'm just so sorry we're out of time, because your stories in Chopin and Beyond, My Extraordinary Life in Music and the Paranormal, Byron, Mr. Byron Janus and Maria Cooper Janus, you are two amazing people. I hope maybe when I'm in New York sometime, I can sit down and have a cup of tea with you. I would just love it.
Because I do hope so. May I just say one thing?
Yes.
Hello, about the paranormal and the very controversial field that it is for reasons which, frankly, I don't understand because it's a... I don't call it paranormal. I call it the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
The unknown normal. The unknown normal. I prefer that. But these things can happen to anybody, and they do. Not to the extent, perhaps, that they happen with me. Anybody can, as long as they have an open mind, believe in this. And it's. I recently was interviewed by an Indian lady who, born in India, brought up in India, and lived in Ireland. She was on the Irish BBC. And in the conversation, she said, Mr. Janus, I don't understand what all the fuss is about with these things that have happened. She said, they're all perfectly normal to us.
Mm-hmm.
There is one answer for you.
I agree.
The culture here just doesn't. The Eastern culture is entirely different. Reincarnation there is absolutely accepted as a natural thing. Look at the Dalai Lama. Look at all these people. I mean, it's part of their lives. And so are all these things. So I just think all these naysayers, they just won't change. But what I do end up in the book saying is I hope at least I've had some people who might say maybe. Maybe.
Well, I definitely feel your book is phenomenally well done. Chopin and Beyond, My Extraordinary Life in Music and the Paranormal, Byron Janus with his beautiful wife, Maria Cooper Janus. These two people, not only have they been together for 46 years, but they have had extraordinary experiences on so many levels. And Maria, she is very much involved with the American Society for Psychical Research. So you would find, if you got this book, that it would be mesmerizing with all of the stories that they have to share. I'm going to thank you both so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with me today. It has been absolutely a delight. And Byron Janus, there's a website for him, byronjanis.com. And believe me, it'll come up, and there's just all kinds of information about him, his career, what he did in Russia. It is absolutely mesmerizing. Again, thank you both for being my guest.
I hope we meet in New York.
Yes, please let us know when you're in town next.
Absolutely will. This is Donna Sebo broadcasting live from Fairbanks, Alaska. Our guests have been in New York City. And due, again, to the marvelous miracles of technology, we're coming to you through the Internet. So we'll be taking a break for just a moment, and we'll be back shortly.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hello and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo again broadcasting to you live from Fairbanks, Alaska, where if you didn't know that you were in Fairbanks, you'd think you were in Palm Springs. Beautiful, beautiful blue skies filled with these wonderful, voluptuous clouds floating through the air that are puffs of white. They're just absolutely gorgeous. And it is a beautiful, beautiful day here in the city of Fairbanks. And everybody's out enjoying it. That's what you do, because they've gone through such a hard winter. And so to have all of this magnificent weather here is just a real pleasure for the people of Fairbanks. Now, I wanted you to know that telephone lines are now open. If you would like to call in and chat with me, that's right, you can, from anywhere in the world. We have a toll-free number of 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Again, 888-815-9756. Now, I want to let you know who's coming on air with me tomorrow. Dr. John Slade is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about climate change and the oceans. And this is a perspective of insight that Dr. Slade is going to be giving about that subject matter. And then on Wednesday, we're going to be talking with Bethany Moradian, and she's got two books we're going to talk about. One is I Got Scammed, So You Don't Have To, and then the Mystery Shopper Training Program. For those of you that maybe are looking for a way to make extra money on the side, this is something that could be a lot of fun. Also, we're going to be traveling to England. On Thursday, we're going to, via, again, the wonders of technology, we're going to be talking with Angela Kilmartin. We're going to be talking about the Patient's Encyclopedia of Urinary Tract Infections. Among women, this is a very significant thing to be addressed, and she has just written one of the best books on it. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking about the Silent Voices of the Soul. Robin Lee Vella is going to be my guest. She is an intuitive herself, and this is a story about her life. So we've got a dynamic lineup of guests. And one of the things that I wanted to let you know is that if you're wanting to get an idea of any of the guests that are coming up, on the air with me, then go in to that little button section by the Donna Sebo Show that says Show Information. And there is a brief summary about the guests that are going to be coming up on my programming. And, of course, with the archives, you can always go back and listen to them at your leisure, and that is something that I think is wonderful for any of us with our busy schedules. Give me a buzz if you want to chat today, 888-815-9756, and I will light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Changing our life patterning, changing our direction, our thinking, usually doesn't evolve with a lot of ease. Why? It just seems like as human beings, we have this tendency to want to make things more difficult, or we get so stuck in our ruts, usually we have to have something come along to give us a wake-up call. Well, that's what happened with a wonderful woman. Her name is Sarita Fuentes. Now, Sarita was at a time in her life, she was 28 years old, and she had not finished her schooling. And she decided she wanted to go back to school. And when she was discussing this with her significant other, her husband, the first thing that came out of his mouth was, "You're going to college? You're not smart enough. No, but you're not even going to be able to get in." So he really, really put her down. Well, Sarita had this driving urge within herself. And when her husband made this comment to her, it just sort of took any kind of energy and enthusiasm for what she wanted to accomplish right out. It just stopped her cold. She just went numb. Now, while she had been in school, Sarita had always been a very fine student. However, when her family ended up with some challenges, the parents got divorced, well, she ended up getting married and at 16 dropping out of school because she just didn't know what to do. Not an unusual positioning for many teenagers to be in. When Sarita got married, he was of the disposition that she was just to stay barefoot, pregnant, stay at home, take care of the kids, and that's all she needed to do. And it wasn't, too long when she realized that one of the things he always wanted to do was to control everything she did. He would tell her where to go, what to do, and the only reason she did not end up leaving is that she found herself getting pregnant. Well, that was something that kept her tied in a relationship that she really didn't want to stay in, but she felt the obligation to do whatever she could. Sarita managed to deal with her husband's negative attitudes and went on to complete her GED. And then after her second child was born, she ended up getting a job as a clerk in the office of a junior high school. Sarita thought her husband would be pleased, but it was exactly the opposite. She said she came to the realization that this was not a man that she wanted to spend the rest of her life with. No matter what she did, he'd always put her down. He would always put down anything and everything that she wanted to move into or to accomplish. And she said, you know what? She was talking to a friend. She said, if I could go back and change things, I would do things much differently. Well, as it turned out, this friend of hers was a principal at a school, and she listened very carefully to what Sarita was telling her. And she said, you know, Sarita, you still can go back to school. You're extremely intelligent. It's never too late to go and get an education. Well, naturally, Sarita, her self-esteem wasn't all that good. But what changed her mind about herself was her friend saying, I could see you being a principal of a school one day. Well, with that kind of support, with that kind of a friend, Sarita said, what's the worst thing that could happen? If I'm not smart enough, I won't be able to make it. Well, she looked at her children, and she realized the things that she was teaching her sons about finishing what you start out, get your education, how important it is. She realized that she had to walk the walk, not just talk the talk, and she did. She ended up telling her husband at the time that she was going to go back to school, and that was going to be her primary objective, and then she followed up by asking him to leave. She said, it's just not going to work, and I don't choose to be in a relationship where someone is not going to respect me and support me. So she found herself as a single mom. She was having to raise her son, but she graduated. After 4 years, she made it. And do you know what? She ended up becoming a principal exactly as her friend had told her she would be years before. Now, she works with homeless young people in San Diego, and she said, I know and understand a lot of these kids. I know what it's like to feel hopeless. But what she tells the kids around her is never give up. It's never too late to change your life. You just have to believe in yourself. And she said, by my doing for me first, doing what I needed to do for me, look at what I'm able to do for the youngsters that I am in charge of. It's a fabulous story. It's a true story. And it's something that should touch your heart and mind and make you aware of the fact that you, just like Sarita, have the right and privilege to be able to change your life when you're ready to do it. But nobody can walk the walk for you. Nobody can talk the talk. And nobody can do the work but you. So keep Sarita in mind if ever you find that you really want to accomplish something and you wonder if it's worth going for. Well, why not check it out? Sarita did, and her life is everything that she has wanted it to be. And she's living with purpose, passion, and fulfillment, and abundance of love from those whose lives she is changing at this time, just like her friend changed hers. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. There is a lovely poem that's accompanied by this exquisite photograph of flowers in bloom in someone's yard. It reminds me of Lake Walled Gardens, which is not too far from where we live, where they have these flowering vines that are just absolutely breathtaking. Of course, they have thousands of species of plants at Lake Walled Gardens, and in the spring, it's breathtakingly beautiful to go through. And that's what this photo in front of me reminds me of. Wildflowers and blossoming trees, a honeycomb sky, a scented breeze. Springtime, you're amazing. And that was written by Femi White. Spring is wonderful. It's just invigorating. There's a smell in the air, of course, all of the delicious fragrances from all of the different plants, like your hyacinths, and you have other fragrant plants that sometimes you'll be walking down a street and you'll go, where is that wonderful, wonderful fragrance coming from? And it might be from something that you have never, ever been aware of before. So when you're out and about during this time of the year, pay attention to your senses. Get that feel with everything that's around you. Allow yourself mentally, emotionally, spiritually, just to really absorb the beauty of this time of the year. It's invigorating. It absolutely is. Dreams, are you a dreamer? Do you have frequent dreams? Well, dreams are what actually got me involved in the development of my own intuitive abilities, which I have to say is an ongoing process. It never stops. And dreams are so significant because they are very unique to each and every individual. And of course, when you're wanting to interpret dreams, you have to use the language of your own mind. You have to be willing to explore and find out what things mean to you. Now, doing dream interpretation has been very much an integral part of my life. And I was talking with a woman over the weekend, and she was having what she called nightmares. And having gone through those nightmare periods, and again, that's what initially got me into the area of psychic study, I asked her what the nightmare was. And at first, she didn't want to share it. It's as if she felt embarrassed. I said, don't be embarrassed. I want you to tell me what your dream actually was. And for her, the dream was a nightmare because she was walking over all kinds of things that were very unpleasant, very ugly, and yet she was in this police car and she was experiencing the feelings that the policemen were having that were in the police car that she was in. They were upset with what they were seeing because it seemed to be pretty ugly and pretty bad. So when she shared that with me, and in a way she was sort of hesitant because it was so emotional for her, and dreams can be this way, and it's a very private experience, and I said, the whole dream is all about you, and what you have to realize is that you are in a safe place. You're in this police car, and of course, I'm not able to tell you all the details on the air, but I'm just going to give you a gist of it, and I was able to break down the dream for her, just like my mentor had broken down a dream, a series of dreams that had been terrifying to me. I was able to assist this woman, and I said, I want you to stop looking at these dreams as nightmares. I want you to realize that these dreams are a part of you who, that is trying to tell you you need to let what is dead stay dead. You need to not let the past overcome you so that you are not responsive to what you need to do for yourself. And there was a lot more detail to it, and there was a light that went on in her eyes, and it was as if she thought, wow, this is all different from what I would have thought it would have been. But that's what dream interpretation does. You will find that as you are willing to work with your own dreams, as you are willing to work with your own intuition, however it may manifest in you, you will learn to trust it, and you will learn to realize that sometimes that which seems to be the ugliest is not really something ugly. It means that you're confronting something within yourself. But each and every person is unique, and your dreams are a wonderful tool to help develop your own intuitive ability. I have been consistently amazed at how information, past, present, and future, can be in one dream that might last about 30 seconds. That's the way it is. So if you're really interested in doing dream interpretation and having an understanding about your own dreams, read all the books you want to read. But you may be like me, where you find a lot of the symbolism interpreted by certain individuals is not going to feel right to you. It just doesn't seem to suit you. That's where you need to learn the language of your mind. And that is the challenge we all have. I don't care what our cultural background is, what language we speak, what sex we are. It is, what is it that my higher self is trying to bring through to me? Sometimes it's just nonsensical stuff. Other times it's pretty deep and profound. So remember, this is your mind. These are your dreams. And maybe tomorrow I'll share with you some information about some symbols in dreams and what they can represent to you. But meanwhile, we're out of time. This is Donna Sebo. I'll be broadcasting to you live from Fairbanks, Alaska, beautiful Fairbanks, Alaska, and I hope that you will join me. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Never forget, your mind, your soul belongs to you. It doesn't belong to anybody else, and it's up to you to enjoy the adventure of self-discovery that can be yours if you're open to it. Donna Sebo here. We're going to say goodbye for now. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.